like whatever that
mm-hmm.
Saturday yeah. was, he saw it maybe not quite this bad, but he basically labeled the entire offseason as malpractice done by the organization, and he knew it wouldn't be very pretty. He did not expect a playoff run. He did not expect the team to win 82-plus games. He said they failed everybody this offseason. They had Paul Skeens. They failed everybody else by just trying to convince themselves that the players they already have who aren't good will suddenly be better.
You want to talk about losing hope? Twitter poll question today. What happens first? Pirates make playoffs or Pirates trade Paul Skeens? Over 1,600 votes, 92% say the Pirates trade Paul Skeens.
I got a little breaking news I think might be relevant for us. Just baseball news. It's because it's the classic. Donnie, you've been in this business long enough to know that when it's a slow day in local sports talk, the old joke is if there's nothing happening, throw open the old should Pete Rose be banned from the Hall of Fame or not. Commissioner Rob Manfred, this is Don Van Natta, so longtime investigative reporter,
yep.
has removed Pete Rose and Shoeless Joe from the MLB's permanent ineligible list. They now have a clear pathway for consideration into the Hall of Fame.
So now it's in the voters' hands.
Correct.
With both. And it's they've never had an opportunity to say before
what they think.
Yeah.
So I thought that was worth breaking in here for a second.
I've read books about Shoeless Joe. There's a lot of different opinions on
kind of
like
a bad
whether
rap,
or not.
Maybe?
Like, yeah, it's
complicated.
It's not clear whether or not he was a part of the Black Sox scandal or not.
I have not read the books you've read, but I've heard kind of similar sort of things that cast a little doubt on whether he deserves a lifetime ban.
I was going to ask, wasn't he like far and away the best player in that series?
Well, it's more so about his, believe it or not, like his like IQ and intelligence as a person, where they people from around that team in that era say they don't think that he really knew what he was doing.
So he was just too dumb to realize
that
it?
He, I guess, like did agree to go along with it, but people.
But then he just went out and played better than everybody else.
People
anyway.
Question whether or not he knew what he was agreeing to do. So he said yes, but they don't think
he
actually had the faculties
to have understood what he needed to do. He went 19, or he had.
Didn't he hit like 400?
He had 12 hits in that series. He hit 375, had a 956 OPS, had four extra base hits. Like, he was a baller for them in that series.
I got to admit, though, the book was so boring. Like, I've retained almost none of it. Like, it was just so bad. I don't know why I did it. But it was one of those situations where with a book, if I started, I just make myself finish it within, like, the hour or two and just try to be done with it altogether.
You should read the Dan Gutman one, like those ones that I always read as a kid. You know, the kid with, like, the... He'd find like a pack of cards.
Oh, I thought you were talking about like Matt Christopher books, like the kid who only hit homers and stuff like that.
No, because he would do that whole series of like fill in the blank and me, and there was like Shoeless Joe and me. I definitely read that
one. I got to give JP on YouTube comments credit. I went to look for this on Twitter while you guys were talking because I just saw him write Pete Rose is going in, finally. Now, that was a little much. It's obviously just going to be open for debate. The literal next comment from Danny is, Mueller is a little rough to look at on YouTube.
Damn.
Stop laughing, Donnie. Don't encourage these people.
Speaking of Hall of Famers, we know Ralph Kiner is in both the Pirates Hall of Fame and the Baseball Hall of Fame in Cooperstown is one of the great home run hitters ever. His Pirates team sucked, but he was a prolific home run hitter nonetheless. I believe he led the league in home runs in 7 straight seasons, which is something that has not happened, I think, before.
It was the old bit
since.
About they were a horrible team, but the people would stay for his last at bat and then go streaming for the exits.
Yep. Isaiah Kiner-Falefa is Ralph Kiner's second cousin, or maybe it's third cousin.
I thought it was second when I saw it yesterday.
And his son, Scott, was at the Mets-Pirates game yesterday and got to meet Isaiah Kiner-Falefa for the first time, and they exchanged some gifts, Kiner jerseys going back and forth, and then a nice portrait of Ralph Kiner was given to Isaiah Kiner-Falefa. And then Scott Kiner, Ralph's son, went on SNY in New York with my friend Steve Gelbs and had this to say about the whole deal.
story of Ralph, the family man. So what can you tell us about Ralph as a father, the type of person that the public didn't know?
Well, I would say that I'm in the lucky sperm club because my dad is such probably one of the greatest ambassadors of baseball that's ever lived. And growing up with him I was a very fortunate child. I got to see things that most people don't get to see. They're in the book. They'll enjoy it. And I hope people look at it because I'm trying to keep his spirit and his incredible life alive.
The Lucky Sperm Club.
I mean, if he's trying to get people's attention to pay attention to him talk about the book, it's not a normal... I don't think that's a typical way
is
to place it.
Is that the title of the book? The Lucky Sperm Club by Scott Kiner?
No, I do not believe so, Pony.
What is the name of the book then?
Something other than The Lucky Sperm Club.
Why not?
Club.
If you named it that, I think people would be more inclined to see what it was all about. That's what I would have told him if I were his publisher. He really believes
might
that.
Might be why you're not a publisher, though.
Because I have brilliant ideas? Because yes. I know how to market and promote?
Oh,
that's why?
You definitely. You just tweet your way to that book being a New York Times bestseller. Man, we started here with Zangrilli ranting. We get all the way to Pete Rose and Shoeless Joe off the permanent ban list. Lucky Sperm Club. Yep. I'm ugly, apparently. This segment contained multitudes here.
If you needed one pirate all time to hit a home run for you and your two options were Ralph Kiner or Willie Stargell, who would you go with?
Depends on the handedness of the pitcher.
Oh, my God. What a cop-out BS answer.
Probably Kiner.
I'd go Stargell.
Actually, you know what? Stargell, and here's why. Clutch player, played in big moments. If I need them to hit a homer for me, Kiner never played in games that mattered.
You're both wrong. Dan Vogelbeck.
You gave us two choices. I'd take Barry Bonds.
I know, it was a trick question.
Just when he was on the Giants.
Bonds wasn't a great home run hitter with the Pirates, so stupid
yes.
answer.
Yeah, he only hit, what, like 36 his last year there? Yeah, you're right. He sucked at hitting home runs with the Pirates. He was terrible at it, actually.
He wasn't a prolific home run hitter with the Pirates. That's obvious.
I mean, 90, 91, 92, the guy in an era where baseball was not as power-oriented averaged basically 31 home runs.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, but no one's comparing him to Jose Canseco or Mark McGwire of that era.
Yeah, I would have still been pretty fine with Barry Bonds taking the home run swing.
Over Stargell or Kiner? Come on.
I'd take Brian Giles then. Golfing one out of there.
Do you think he had some help?
I think they gave him and Secretariat had the same doctor.
But no one's ever really linked Giles. It's always been innuendo.
I thought he tested positive. I also thought like it kind of got swallowed up by the fact that we found out about Brian Giles that he was a pretty bad guy, like not long after he left the Pirates.
So because he was a bad guy, people just stopped caring about whether or not he used steroids?
Yeah, he also was like playing for the Pirates back then, so he's racking up big seasons, averaging 37 home runs a year.
I mean, what are you talking about? A lot of those Pirates teams could destroy this current one. Look at those lineups.
That says a lot more about this current team.
Look at some of those teams.
God, his power pretty much fell off a cliff.
Like, I take the 2005 Pirates over this team in a friggin' heartbeat.
Donnie, can you name?
Yeah. Would you? Look at that lineup in 05.
Can you name the 2005 Pirates starting lineup, Donnie? How many guys can you name from their 2005, like, everyday eight? I feel like this is a wheelhouse one for you.
It is, because it's an MVP baseball.
It's 9 or 10 years old. I'm going strictly by on baseball reference here. I'll give you one guy who was a utility player who played 142 games, and you can throw him in there.
I think Donnie knows who that is just by the way you described him.
Well, I mean, Bay was in left field.
Correct. Yep.
Wilson was at short.
Correct.
I don't know who you want to go with at second, either Jose Castillo or Freddie Sanchez.
Go Castillo. And you can have Sanchez because he's listed as their third baseman, so you just knocked off two more there. You're 4-for-4.
Craig Wilson at first.
They list Darryl Ward, but Wilson's, okay. I mean, Ward played more games, but I'll give you Wilson as one of their other guys.
Yeah, let's see.
If you get the center fielder and the right fielder.
Oh, he's
going to
get the center fielder because the center fielder is one of his favorite Pirates names of all time.
Tyke Redman.
Yep. Okay.
Now, see, on right field, I remember like that, the game right field, it was Matt Lawton.
Yep.
Yep.
Was he there that whole season?
Oh, yeah. He was. Well, not the whole. He wasn't. He played in, what, 100 games, Chris?
Lawton played 101 games for that team. There's one super utility guy who hit a couple of the most memorable home
runs. Rob Mikowiak.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
All right. If you can get the guy Baseball Reference lists as their starting catcher, And he did catch 93 games.
He's going to get one of the catchers for sure.
I think he'll get the guy who technically caught fewer games because he had a funny nickname and we would kind of laugh about his deficiencies in certain parts of playing his position.
Dude, that lineup.
Was Domit there yet?
No, Mitt Domit was was their backup catcher.
And was that that the year they had Benito Santiago?
No. Humberto Cota. Yep.
That lineup.
What about Ty Wingington? Was he still there?
He was on the team then. Yep. Because they had made the Chris Benson
trade. Lineup only had Bay hitting 32 homers, though. There weren't, like, other big power guys. The next leading home run guy was Brad Eldred with
12. How about the 2000 Pirates?
I think you're thinking of the 03 team that had, like, Reggie Sanders balling out.
He wasn't there the whole season,
Sanders
was he?
Sanders had, what, like 35 31. Homers?
Matt Stairs, 20 home runs for that team. Craig Wilson hit 18. Giles in
Chris,
his...
Chris, that 2005 Pirates lineup is still way better than this one.
Yes, yeah, I know. It's way more about this year's team not being good.
You got a batting champion and a rookie of the year in that
God,
lineup.
You know what just hurts is to look at the 0-1 team. In the middle of that lineup, Ramirez coming into his own with 34 home runs. Giles with 37 that year. Kevin Young still kind of, you know, the old plow horse at first base.
And this team's third best hitter is who? Joey Bart? He's got one homer.
O'Neill Cruz.
Quarter of the way through the season.
It is Joey Bart.
I know.
He might be the second best.
Dude, it's
sickening.
Disheartening, man, to say the least.
It goes back to what Dan was saying.
Yeah, give me that Dan rant one more time.
Holy cow!
What is
the heck was that?
They found a way to grab a pickaxe, a shovel, and dig even a deeper hole to a rung of hell that is far past Satan himself.
Segment brought to you by Mike's Beer Bar. The fan beer of the month is General Braddock's Brew Gentleman, and the charity of the month is Irreverent Warriors. Fan Hotline is presented by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. Greg Brown is in New York, Flushing, Queens, to be precise, as the Pirates and Mets set to do battle tonight. Donnie Kelly seeking his first road victory as Pirates skipper. We'll get to the injury report brought to you by Shenderovich, Shenderovich, and Fishman. They've got your back, not your wallet, because we need to figure out what's going on with O'Neill Cruz. He's got a gimpy back that's been bothering him, that's had him laid up the last few days. Greg, let's start with the big decision. Derek Shelton shown the door. Ben Cherington still remains in charge of the team as general manager. In your opinion, did Ben Cherington deserve to keep his job as GM?
I cut off there. Did he what now?
Did you feel like Ben Cherington deserved to keep his job as GM?
Yeah, I mean, I think that I like what I heard Bob Nutting tell Jason Mackey, that when Jason Mackey asked him that question, he said that, you know, disrupting things right now is not the way to go, to upset the apple cart and to stick with the plan for now and see what happens at this point. He still believes that there's the guys in place can win more games. And I think that makes sense. I'm anxious to see what the team does look like when they are at full health. What do they look like if they do have Andy Rodriguez back? Spencer Horowitz, what does he do? How does he change the lineup? Nick Gonzalez. And I think then we'll know, you know, the rest of the season what that plan was. I think it was a lot of bad luck that he ended up having these guys all injured at the same time. And so, yeah, I'd say a long-winded answer to your question, I'd say yes.
Given the track records of the three guys, though, you mentioned there, and I know O'Neill Cruz, who we'll ask you about in a minute, is also currently day-to-day and dealing with, back issues. But with all due respect to those three players, I would not say any of them have the reputation of, like, total lineup complexion changer. And even if you put all three of them in the lineup at the same time, how much are you really getting from improving a team that right now is the worst offense in baseball, would be my rebuttal, Greg.
Well, I'll go back to what we talked about last week, and that the Pirates were winning last year into July. I think they were the All-Star break, if I'm not mistaken. They were, I don't know, within a couple games of a wild card, something. I mean, they're playing well enough to above 500 and competing. Mm-hmm. And then they kind of crashed. And as I said last week, that is how I think the game plan is. Their attempt to win is by pitching and just enough offense. And I think that some of the, and I, by the way, I'm glad you brought that up, because Andrew, I was listening to the you guys driving into work last week, and I heard you say.
Now you cut out. You still there?
Suggesting that.
We lost you there, Greg. You cut out for a second.
You cut out when you said, and I heard you say, and then we didn't hear any of it.
Yeah, sorry about that.
I heard you say that Greg Brown said that Justin Lawrence and Tim Mesa were devastating and crushing.
Yes.
Which I never said.
Oh, you did not say they were huge losses?
No, I said it was big. Big losses. And I never compared Justin Lawrence to Mariano Rivera.
No, I said that. That was me.
Yes, you did. But you said I was comparing him as if Greg Brown was suggesting that Justin Lawrence was Mariano Rivera.
Well, I thought you made it sound like it was a crushing loss. You didn't think it was?
It was big to the bullpen. Absolutely. Big, but not to suggest that they can't come back from big losses.
Yeah.
In terms of the bullpen, they've done that. I think the bullpen has regrouped with the return of Bednar. That's certainly been big. He's last night, was not his fault, in my opinion. It's been the offense. It's been the offense not scoring just enough runs. I mean, they've got a record going now. I think it's 18 consecutive games, not scoring four runs or more, a team record.
Yep.
Yeah.
So it is the offense not, and again, back to your question, Chris, I don't know the answer to that. I don't know if you have Spencer Horowitz and Nick Gonzalez and, say, Andy Rodriguez in the lineup on a regular basis, whether they don't just score that extra run.
Well, let me ask you a different question about the offense then, and about a player who reputationally should be able to help them more. At what point do we start getting concerned about Brian Reynolds this year, who is, by any of the WAR metrics on Fangraphs, is basically one of the worst everyday players in the entire major leagues?
Yeah, I don't know when that is either, and I'll be anxious to ask Donnie whether at some point you do one of two things. Do you sit him for a couple days? Do you drop him down in that lineup? And I know I was all in favor of keeping a consistent lineup. Heck, he has been in favor of that. But I think sometimes you have to do something different. Either get him out for a while or drop him down, because I agree with you. And those he's looking right now as bad as he's looked in a long time. And so I think when all is said and done at the end of the year, he's probably going to have those same numbers like he does every year. I think you can pretty much count on that. But right now, when they're desperately searching for ways to score runs, not to point the finger at him, but let's face it, that double play ball he hit into last night, talking about crushing.
Younger player, Greg, I would be almost anybody else on that team, I'd be excoriating him for going right after the first pitch playing right into New York's hands. It was terrible approach-wise.
No doubt. There's no argument there. 100%.
Greg, I apologize if you thought like I exaggerated what you said about those guys, but my point was, if you lose a waiver claim pickup from Colorado and a guy that you signed for like a couple million dollars to be a middle innings reliever, those should not be big losses. I'm sorry. If that's your argument, I disagree with you, because Lawrence's career ERA is almost 6. He's just a guy. They didn't have any expectations for him this year. You lose him, it's like, okay, no big deal. He was not looked at as a part of their bullpen.
I disagree with that, Andrew. When a team constructs a club, a 26-man roster, losses like that mean more to the Pirates than to the Mets, no matter how it's done. I mean, the Pirates, you remember 13, 14, and 15.
Sure.
Remember Jason Grilley?
Yep.
I mean, go back and look at Jason. What if they had lost Jason Grilley? They picked him up in a similar fashion.
I don't know. Melanson probably would have pitched the 9th. Watson would have pitched the 8th. Wilson would have pitched the 7th, and they still probably would have been okay.
Maybe so. But it would have been a big loss at the time, and as I said, that's just one facet of this team. Going back to the question about how the Pirates are going to try and win games or this year and still are, they were never going to outscore people. They have to outpitch people, and they have to score just enough runs offensively. And when they lost, and I don't want to make too much of it either. At this point we're talking way too much about two relievers. In the middle of a conversation last time I was on with you,
yeah,
I made mention of the fact that the bullpen was disrupted. Those were big losses. But now you do move on. You're right. And I think they are regrouping, and they have to do that. I'm not making that as an excuse of why they were losing mm-hmm. all those games, but it's one facet in so many things. A team like the Pirates can't afford to lose the players that we mentioned offensively and bullpen guys. Jared Jones, do you remember before the season started?
Sure.
When I said, you guys asked me, what's going to happen with Jared Jones? And to be one crazy, I said, it's going to be a while. And I got blasted for that. And it's going to be a while. It was not good news. And that's the truth. And so the Pirates are going to miss Jared Jones for half a year? That's big.
I don't disagree with that at all, because he was basically pegged as their second or third starter when the season started.
It's all part and parcel to the makeup of this team.
Greg, on Ben Cherington, to go back to him for a second, I know what you said. You alluded to what Bob Nutting told Jason Mackey. He did not want to essentially completely, obliterate his front office midseason. He didn't feel that would be productive to trying to get this thing back on track. Do you think this team's performance the rest of the way this year will determine Ben Cherington's job status for 2026 and beyond?
Well, I guess, Chris and Andrew, I will go back to what Bob Nutting said even over the wintertime. I think it was at Pirate Fest, and you guys might have talked to him or, quote, I don't know, about how he believes that it's time to win. I think even Ben Cherington said that.
Yeah.
That's the thing. It's not a secret. So I'm not saying anything that's not already been out there, that they have to win this year. Now, I don't know what that definition of win is. At this juncture, beginning of the season, I would have thought winning means contending, deep into the season, and I'm going to stick to that because that's what they said. So I think that we will look back at some point this year, and they will then determine how they move forward. But I'll just go back to that's what they said. Their intention this year was to win, and I believe that's. That's Bob Nutting's intention.
Cruz good to go tonight? Or are we still going to wait on that, Greg?
Don't know yet. We'll see. I was, Don said before the game that available to pinch hit, but when he didn't pinch hit late in the game, I was worried about that last night, but I have not found that out yet. I'm heading to the clubhouse shortly.
What differences do you expect from Derek Shelton, the manager, to Donnie Kelly, the manager? One thing that fans have pointed out is they also got rid of their game planning coach and strategy coach, and that might mean that Donnie is allowed to make more decisions on his own as opposed to Shelton. Greg?
Well, yeah. All I know is no matter who was making those decisions, there's no way that Ryan Barucki gets up three times the other day like he did Saturday, and mm-hmm. I'm not blaming anybody. I'm just saying this is different. It was obviously different. I said it on the air immediately. Wow, Barucki's up a third time, which was the first time I asked our statistician to check that. First time since the summer of 2023 that Barucki actually pitched in three different innings. That told me that the guys on that bench right now, led by Don Kelly, are watching the game closer and maybe not tied to numbers as much. Maybe. That's early. My goodness, it's only four games in. But what I've seen, I saw Don Kelly go to the end of the dugout yesterday to high-five one of the players. It might have been IKF. On a defensive play.
It was.
He went from one end of the dugout to the other. I saw during a pitching change, he called over Jared Triolo or Henry Davis. Might have been Henry Davis with Triolo on base, but he called him over. He and I think Matt Haig was there and maybe a couple other coaches. Might have been Oscar Marin. But anyway, and then Don called, almost positive it was Henry Davis, called him back and to tell him something. And lo and behold, Triolo took off. I think might have been the time that Davis
wanted. There was a steal that was going to happen, and I think they wanted Davis to know that the steal was on.
Okay. Well, that's what it was. So those are the different things that I have seen that again appear to me to be different. And Don seems to be a guy who's going to not maybe rely on assistance, but he's actually going to do it himself. He's going to talk directly to these players and truly communicate. And I do get the sense that these guys really enjoy it. So again, only four games, and things, by the way, things can go really, really south if all of a sudden they start getting beat badly and we go through another long losing streak. I mean, this is a tough road here. Two more with the Mets, three with the Phillies, potential for blowouts. Look at the payroll the Mets have. They're the highest payroll in all of baseball, historic. And so, you know, you could say that this is a roster that appears to be outmanned badly, but they love the battle last night. It was a game that you argued they could have won and maybe should have won.
I'd like my gold glove third baseman to make that play, by the way.
I no doubt. He should have made that play.
I'd also like my catcher, who was a 1-1 pick, to know where he should be positioned home.
Yep. Again, no argument here. Also, would love to have seen Triolo score, or at least try to, on a similar play.
Yep, I agree.
Earlier, I don't know whether I was trying to find a replay to find out, was it Acuna who turned? Did he pay attention to Mike Sarbaugh, the Mets third base coach? Or was it Acuna on his own who looked over his shoulder to see that ball had trickled out to almost identical spot, and he went ahead and scored? I would love to have seen Triolo do the same thing. And we are seeing a more aggressive, kind of roll-the-dice type of team right now over the last four games. So that surprised me that Triolo didn't break for the plate, whether it was his decision not to, whether Mike Grabello decided not to send him home, I don't know. But my gosh, that's, again, a difference maker.
Greg, thank you so much. We appreciate it. Enjoy New York, and we'll talk again when you're back in Pittsburgh next week. Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Listen to Starkey and Pomp every Wednesday to hear about Starkey's Card of the Week from Baseball Card Castle in Cranberry. Contest runs every Wednesday through Friday at noon on the 93.7thefan.com contesting page. That music means it's time for Donnie's segment, the Donnie Football Debrief, and it's brought to you by Soloni's Italian Bread Company. Over 100 years of baking experience. Donald?
The Debrief, May 13, 2025. We didn't get to this yesterday, but we're going to get to it today. Our guy, Chris Berman, signing a multi-year extension with ESPN that will take him through the Super Bowl in 2027. He will become, if he finishes out this contract, the first 50-year talent at the network.
That would be 2029, because he's a day one guy, and I think they started in, what, 79, I believe it was.
Well, unless you want to take it up with front office sports, they said 2027.
I thought it was 2029 that he would have to stick around to become a 50-year employee there.
ESPN did start in 79, according to Wikipedia.
Kiss my ass, front office sports.
Berman is 70. I think he's still got his fastball. I think he's had a great career renaissance here.
You think primetime streaming only with Booger has like reinvigorated him? They're kind of the little underdog now?
I think we might have hit a saturation point with Berman where there was too much Chris Berman.
Home run derby.
I feel like there's not enough Chris Berman.
But it's a perfect little digestible bite. He gets to do primetime on ESPN Plus. He and Booger seem to be having the time of their lives.
I disagree with you, because I still feel like he's needed at big events.
Like what?
They don't use him at the draft.
I don't think no, they have Greenberg. My God.
Yeah, exactly, Chris.
Yeah, they should actually airlift Berman in there. Just
or at
him.
Least give him a day, Donnie.
They should have one of those things like give in Austin Powers where
give him day three.
Greenberg's chair disappears into the floor and you just hear screaming, and then Berman just pops up.
Oh, could you imagine how much better day three of that draft would be if they brought in Berman?
But does he want day three, or does he feel like that's an insult? Oh, you mean I got to like make these fourth and fifth and sixth rounders sound
big?
Yeah,
but I think the appealing thing to him would be, hey, it's a little bit looser. You can
be flippant,
be yourself.
Goofy.
You can be your classic Berman self. You can do all your Berman nicknames, and you can bring up rock songs from the 60s and 70s nonstop, make references to those when talking
the
about
draft
guys
is in
who
Boston.
Got drafted.
I've got more than a feeling that there's something coming down the pike here.
Exactly.
You've got peace of, I'll have my peace of mind after. No, I mean, he's, he is, I think, like, still the most identifiable person. Like, there have been so many great talents. Olbermann, when he had his fastball, was unbelievable. Dan Patrick, that SportsCenter on Stu Scott. Eisen now is back at the network.
I was going to ask you guys about
Eisen
that.
Will be returning.
He's not going to be like over the air. He's strictly part, like the centerpiece, it sounds like, of this streaming property and radio property. He's going to be on ESPN radio potentially, but he's mainly their streaming, like their big streaming push that they're making. But
so he's going to be on NFL Network and ESPN. From the way you're describing it, Eisen.
I thought he was done at NFL Network.
Oh, okay.
I thought he was taking his NFL Network, like his Rich Eisen show.
But who's going to do the NFL draft for NFL Network and who's going to do their Sunday?
Maybe I'm wrong on that. I didn't look deep
game
into
day
that.
Shows. Who's going to call, for example, I'm guessing the Steelers-Vikings game will be an NFL Network game. Who would call that if he's leaving for this ESPN thing? He's not going to give those assignments up. I think he's going to be on both. His show is going to be sublicensed by ESPN, and that's going to allow for him to remain on NFL Network calling those games and doing
those. It'll be licensed. Okay, so his deal is similar to McAfee. It's licensed by ESPN, which means he gets ownership and creative control.
Nothing about him leaving NFL Network,
I'm looking at like
Network,
Andrew
right?
Marchand's piece about this as to whether or not it involves him
leaving. Because I feel like
leaving.
If he were done at NFL Network, he's a day zero guy at NFL Network. I feel like that would have been one of the headlines. He leaves NFL Network.
Here, I got it. Sorry, it was just too many ads choking the page here. It will not affect his NFL Network status. So there you go. By the way, Darren Revelle took time with this Berman news to point out, he sent like some stupid thing that I saw on Instagram threads.
That par for the course for him?
Well, hold on. This is more just me ripping Revelle.
Okay, I'm listening.
Who, by the way, I mean, we've all seen the videos of Darren Revelle attempting to run, right? Like how
his
bad
his 40
it looks.
Time was horrible.
When he came to Penn State, when I was like a very impressionable, like I think senior, and like gave a talk about what it takes to make it in the business, because he was a pretty young guy himself who had already made it to a pretty significant degree. And I'll never forget how hard I laughed a couple of years ago when I thought back to his main thing was, I know it sounds shallow, you got to work out though and kind of try to be an athlete. These guys respect you more when you look and kind of carry yourself like them, and then he's one of the least athletic people in history. His Berman take was basically that when you walked by Berman's cubicle or wherever he worked at ESPN, there was a deli counter, like, take a number, don't approach me directly. And he goes, it was only half of a joke. Bob Lee, on the other hand, was a total gentleman. Makes it all about him and what he thought Chris Berman was, a big jerk, which who knows, Berman might have been. There are some outtake videos that don't make Berman seem like the nicest guy all the time. But my God, you're Darren Revelle. You think you're going to get public sympathy for this story? Everyone thinks you are the literal dictionary definition of a herb.
How do you guys feel about 9:30 kickoff for Steelers and Vikings?
I got Undertaker there, Donnie. He had nothing. It was just me.
I don't care
somebody.
Enough about Darren Revelle to.
It was me attacking someone.
I let you go off on the guy, and then I just said, "Cool, I'm going to." Bring it back to Steelers and Vikings here for a second.
Were you expecting a different time?
I wasn't, but I like that at 9:30 in the morning, there's an NFL game that I can watch. But I don't like to have to that early just
set
completely,
your fantasy lineups.
Well, just lock it. No, it's not about that. It's about the fact that at 9:30 in the morning, I have to be like fully consumed by that Steelers Vikings game. I feel like with
what
the
are they,
other
5 or 6 hours ahead in Dublin.
Five, I think. I feel like with the other early games like that, like I'll eat breakfast, I'll do stuff around the house while I'm watching it. I'm not glued to my TV at 9:30 watching those early games.
Okay, so they're 5 hours ahead, so that's a 2:30 kick in Dublin, okay? You could have it be a 7:30 kick local time, except that falls right in between the 1 and 4 o'clock windows. So the NFL.
Why can't they kick the ball off at 1 o'clock our time?
That's a 6:30 Dublin kick.
Why can't they do that?
Don't you think they want
could.
Their international game to not sit against the rest of the 1 o'clock slate?
Yeah,
they want
I think
the international
want to
game to be a standalone. In fact, it's probably contractually mandated to be one. You're putting an international game up there. You're trying to grow the game. You don't want people checking into Jags Colts instead of the international game. You want them force-fed one game in Dublin at Croke Park.
I'm sure our West Coast Steelers fans love that it's a 6:30 in the morning start for them.
And you know what the NFL says to them?
That's total BS.
Do you know what the NFL says to them? Here's your slop. We know you'll keep eating it. Have a nice day.
And they will. People will absolutely get up and watch it. I mean, let's look at it this way. How many teams have played over there multiple times in the last 12 years? Because that is the gap between Steelers international games. We've gotten pretty lucky with not having to wake up and watch a 9:30
game. I agree. It's just my preference is that the Steelers game doesn't happen at 9:30 in the morning. That's
all. Even then, when they played in London, they didn't play at 9:30 in the morning.
No, that was 1 o'clock. That's what I'm talking about.
So I think we can do it once and be okay.
Oh, but you know, the difference is if we're all there, which has obviously been bandied about, it won't really matter to us.
I stopped listening because
I mean, I'll have to be on air at 6:30 in the morning.
I don't listen to fantasy land here. Pony's going to be there probably in what amounts to a luxury suite at this place. I'm not even sure Croke Park has
them. They're going to get you. You can patch in there. They're making Crowley patch in. If we're there, do the pregame show from Ireland.
We will not be there, Donnie. Narrator, they weren't there.
I'm not so sure about Donnie.
Narrator, only Andrew Filippone from the PM team.
I think there's a better chance than you might think that Donnie's going to be there. That's all I'm going to say about it.
Yeah, you've been teasing big things in Donnie's career for well over a year, and they never
Donnie, am I onto something there with that? I'm not saying anything more, but do you think I might be onto something with you going over to Ireland?
It'd have to be more by my own volition.
But would you say the percentage chance of you going to Ireland went up today?
You're saying this like he had something happen today that you both know about that I don't.
Maybe.
I mean, that wouldn't be any
news. And oh, how the turntables have done something. Because usually you and Donnie commiserate and you find out things about him before I do. Like when he was getting engaged and he told you months before he told me. And now I might know something big that's going on with Donnie that you don't know.
And I understand
so how
why
does
all
it
this,
feel now, Chris?
I understand why all this hurts you because there's nothing in this world, I think, other than your daughter and your wife that you like more than having scuttlebutt and other people not having
well,
it.
Well, Malzie didn't come in this morning before that big important lunch you guys had that I missed out on. And you did, so you benefited, Pony.